FM HD3, Urbana.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guest today on Keeping the Faith is Laura Frericks, who is the director of the University of Illinois Research Park. Welcome, Laura.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Good to have you here in this part of the campus. The Research Park is located where, for listeners that may not be familiar with that?
Well, it's just south of Assembly Hall, so many people drive by it to go to football or basketball games. That's where the parking is for those games, and it takes up about 200 acres.
And you have now how many different buildings there in that park?
13 buildings and 90 companies. And so I think
90 companies,
yeah,
90.
90, that's a mixture of startup companies and large corporations, that many of which have signs on the outsides of the buildings, like I said, that people might recognize, but most of the companies are small companies.
What are some of the biggest companies that you have who've chosen to have that wonderful location here close to the university?
Some of the big companies include Caterpillar and Abbott and John Deere, State Farm, Yahoo. Some companies from California that are publicly traded, like Riverbed and Citrix and others that are located there. We've really had a really nice mix of companies that have an engineering interest or some sort of excellence that they're seeking out of the university and have chosen to establish here.
Now, the topic of our conversation today is the value of shared knowledge. And here are these companies that have their own businesses, their own focus, their own goals. Why would they want to all be together, and particularly right up next to a big university?
Well, certainly I think the value is putting them together and creating this vibrant tech community. If we just had the buildings, it really wouldn't be what it has grown to become today. And I don't think we would have attracted any number of the companies that I've mentioned and others, because they really do appreciate learning from each other and being surrounded by other smart people that are of like minds who want to do things in the innovation and technology space. They learn from each other through events that we have where there's lots of knowledge sharing, and there are groups that have sprung up where they can share topics with each other, lots of informal conversations, and the co-location of the companies in the same building with atriums that are large and conference rooms that are shared really allows them to intersect with each other in a campus-like environment, and I think that's been key to our success.
And tell me about the parties, picnics, bonfires, barbecues.
So part of my job that people don't know is I'm really the cruise director for the Research Park, a title that's not formalized, but we do 100 events a year. So it's a whole mix of things, everything from a really raucous ping pong tournament that includes about 100 people a year. And this year went from 4 o'clock in the afternoon until 11:30 at night, which kind of speaks to people not all being about work, but a lot of rivalry and good competition and that sort of thing, to many different events that are more focused on educational types of topics. We do Startup Cafe, for example, where, and it's, I think, a good example of shared knowledge, where somebody who's been a successful entrepreneur in our community will come and share their story. And it's really about what would you pass on to the next entrepreneur if you could have known when you were starting. And they'll spend an hour sharing tips with each other, never get paid. And it's just a way to share knowledge in the entrepreneurial space. We have CEO roundtables where, from a leadership standpoint, it's really a collaborative environment where it's a roundtable discussion of what's happening in your company and how can we help each other? What are some of the topics that are most relevant to each other? We have Women in Tech Group, where it's just about women helping other women who tend to be very underrepresented in the technology sector and showing that it can happen and you can be a successful engineer and you can manage your personal life and family along with your career. And a lot of those discussions, kind of interesting, where women try to usually find balance. It always comes up in the dialogue in addition to what they're doing professionally.
Now, you don't have any personal experience with that. You're not married, I don't think, right?
Yeah. A lot of balance has to happen in our household also, for sure. And I have a 4-year-old daughter who is adorable and hard to break away from, but we all do what we can to make it work.
We can actually say on public radio to whom you are married, since now the election season is officially over. Your spouse is...
One stress gone. I'm married to Senator Mike Frerichs. He's the state senator for the 52nd district.
And so the two of you are balancing one career in public service and government, one in how do you describe your job? I mean, what is it?
Well, a lot of what I do is supporting the entrepreneurial community. But from the university standpoint, I work for the University of Illinois.
You are hired officially. You're on the staff.
Officially university employee. Okay. I did work for the private developer for about 4.5 years of the research park.
No, that's Fox.
Yes, Fox Atkins, and switched to work for the university about 3.5 years ago. So
was that your choice?
It was. There was an opening in the role. At the time, the person who was running the research park on the university side took a different position within the university, and I had only just come back from maternity leave. And I'll say this was the last thing on my mind was trying to take a big new position. But sometimes life calls with opportunities and you take the one that seems like the right fit. And I saw an opportunity to create a lot of new programming in this role. And we've seen, I think, a lot of the fruits of the different things that we could put together from the event standpoint, like I talked about, but also lots of support resources, which I'm really passionate about. And I think, you know, from the university standpoint, it's a unique type of position and the staff that we have because it's this intersection of the industry side of the community and the university. And how can we bring some of the best of each other together in this community of technology businesses to create new opportunities for Champaign-Urbana?
Now, I want to get back, of course, to our announced topic of talking about the value of shared knowledge with your experience as director of the research park. But let our listeners know a little bit about your personal background. I know you went to the University of Illinois and were student body president.
I was. It was probably one of the best experiences I've ever had in my life. I represented a very large student body here. It was in the 30,000s at that time, but was elected. And we had a lot of different struggles at that time at the I retrospectively look back that I was probably a problem maker for the administration, and now, ironically, I work for the administration. We were fighting the athletic fee at the time, which was the first fee to be imposed on students at a public university that would benefit just the varsity athletic teams, and it was in support of the stadium, versus fees being established that historically were created and sanctioned by Illinois Board of Higher Education as self-taxes that would benefit things like the student union and health services and campus rec facilities that benefited the student body in total. So we fought that. We lost that battle, but we got a lot of attention, got on CNN and NPR and the Tribune and made it difficult for them. So that was a little bit of my student rebel rouser days.
Would you mind telling us what decade that was?
I was student body president from 97 to 98. And that happened during the summer of 97. No surprise, we thought, that they chose to put that in place in the Board
summer.
Of Trustees schedules in the summer. But but it kept going for a while. So, yeah, that was the student side of
life. Why would the university hire you with that in your background?
They didn't check the DI archives. I know we were talking about WILL archives. I can say another public media institution in this town that keeps great archives is the DI. And there are some probably spirited comments that I made at the time. But
and, in fact, Roger Ebert, another graduate of the university, wrote his first published book based on the archives from the DI.
Really?
On the history of the University of Illinois as seen through the eyes of the student newspaper.
Neat.
Right.
So I left my days here in student politics and worked at Leo Burnett, an ad agency in Chicago, and worked in media and worked on Allstate, Pillsbury, and U.S. Army were my three biggest clients.
What had you majored in as an undergrad?
Advertising and marketing. So okay. It was exactly what I had set out to do. Worked for top agency in Chicago and had a wonderful time doing it. It was really creative and had a great people to work with, media I really liked. But I had met somebody down here, and that was Mike, who I ended up marrying. And his political career was downstate Illinois, and he convinced me to move down here. And that wasn't a career that was going to make sense down here. And I started working for the state of Illinois for Department of Commerce doing economic development for East Central Illinois. And that's eventually what led to me working on Research Park about 7.5 or 8 years ago.
Now, your daughter is how old now?
She's 4. She turned 4 in October. And we were visiting Santa today to hear about all her wishes. So she's got quite an active mind, and she's involved in things like ballet and ice skating, and goes to school in the research park. So I can say that's another lifestyle thing that's been working out well for us, bringing it back to my job. And her being across the street is really helpful, and I know a lot of other parents appreciate that as well.
And what is that facility called?
It has two parts. There's Chesterbrook, which also has another location in Southwest Champaign. Chesterbrook, interestingly, was formed by Larry Ellison, who's a famous graduate out of the university. Well, he didn't actually graduate, but he's a famous student from the university who went on to found Oracle and had an objective of improving early childhood education, and started Chesterbrook centers around the country. And we have two in this community now, and there's one in the research park. And then the other half of that building is for the speech language clinic. Since it's a research park, we wanted a research component as well. And so many of the students who have speech or hearing issues can go next door and receive additional assistance, with many students from that program on campus helping in that facility.
On Keeping the Faith this afternoon, we're talking with Laura Frerichs. That's spelled F-R-E-R-I-C-H-S, Laura Frerichs, who's the director of the University of Illinois Research Park. We're talking today about the value of shared knowledge, and we'll get back to that in just a minute. Let me give the phone numbers for listeners who might like to join this conversation. You've heard a little bit about Laura's background, and you might have questions about that or about her current position working as director of the park. The phone numbers, if you are in the Champaign-Urbana listening area, in the 217 area code, punch in 333-9455. That's 333-WILL, the call letters of the station, of course. If it's long distance, there's a toll-free line, 1-800-222-9455. So both of them in WILL, the local line is 333. The long-distance line is 800-222-9455. And, of course, listeners on the Internet can use the long-distance number if you're in the continental U.S. I realize we do have listeners who hear this program live around the world, as well as many of the other programs here on WILL. Sorry we can't help you with that. You may know how to deal with international calls free. I don't, but if you can get to one of those numbers, we're happy to take your call. Our engineer, Kyle Crowell, will answer the phone and put you in line to talk with our guest, Laura Frerichs. Laura, let's talk a little bit about what goes on in these 13 buildings here by the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana. What do these 90 companies actually do? Why is it a benefit to them? How do they make money by being here?
Sure. So there's a mix of activity, although I'd call it all research and technology in nature, and that's by permitted uses of the park as well. Some of them are working on things that are software development related. There's mobile development types of projects that are one of the newest sectors, but then there are certainly all different types of science. Abbott, for example, works on nutritional sciences, which is creating new ingredients for infant formula. We have companies that are working in the aerospace area that are trying to improve systems for NASA. We have companies that are in the chemistry space that are working on new drug development. So how can we overcome health challenges like staph infections or oncology-related solutions that will hopefully prevent problems that people are having medically? So if there's an area, I'd say, that was good at the University of Illinois, there's a good chance that somebody wants to commercialize something out of it. And at least on the scientific sides of things where there's an opportunity for commercialization. We have extended into other areas as well. For example, there's a company that came out of the College of Education that's working on new publishing and new ways to interact with students even at the elementary school level, and has attracted a lot of funding and press around the world. So lots of different areas of strength, certainly at the university, as broad and diverse as it is, and much of that has landed in some form in the research park.
How does the university screen these companies that want to be here? Because, you know, some are obviously of great benefit to the university, but there may be some corporations the university wouldn't want here. How do they decide? Who gets to decide, I guess, is my first question.
On the startup side of things, they do have to apply to get into the incubator. It's called Enterprise Works Incubator, and it requires a fairly detailed application pertaining to what type of business it will be, what their milestones are, their plans, a business plan, financials, and a technology assessment. Most of those become pretty clear decisions. We're typically looking for university-related research that has a commercial pathway. Most of our clients are faculty starting companies. About 60% right now are businesses started by professors, which seems like a real good fit for us. So rarely would there be a problem with those if they've gone through the proper process to applying to get in. On the outside companies, the external side of things, they also have to apply to come in, and that they are subject to the covenants of the research park, which it's a lengthy legal document about various ways that companies can act in the research park in addition to outlining specific types of technology areas and permitted uses. And we, through the University of Illinois Research Park, get to approve those companies.
And, of course, the university has many standards of its own that its faculty have to abide by and its staff. And I'm sure there are ethics statements and maybe even ethics training and sexual harassment training and that sort of thing that the companies who are here who would be having students and grad students maybe helping out, maybe being employed part-time, might have to also accept those standards too.
Well, on the university faculty side, one of the big issues we have is conflict. So managing conflicts of interest and conflict of commitment, which goes through a process through the Vice Chancellor for Research Office to make sure that they are still able to do their university duties in addition to working in their company. The students also are subject to some of that as we're looking to manage student work as their priority here is academics first and then working in the park as a secondary component of being here at the university.
I want to get back to that in just a couple minutes, but we are at about 20 minutes into our program. Let me take a little break to announce some upcoming programs and some special announcements that we have, particularly in this season of the year. For new listeners, this is Keeping the Faith. It's an hour-long program here on WILL every Sunday evening from 5 to 6 p.m. Central Time. It's a live interview show, and we have a number of different fascinating guests. You can go to our website at willill.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith. Leave the G off of keeping, and you can see our many years of past programs, 52 a year for the last 14 years. So we have quite an archive there that you can enjoy at your leisure on many different electronic devices these days. Again, that's will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith. Next week on Keeping the Faith, December 9th, we have two guests by phone, Krista Click and Chad Pittman, who are two young adults who are in a faith-based volunteer program. One has served internationally, one in a couple places here in the U.S. We'll be talking to them about that experience, what it's like to work as a volunteer. Often right out of college, students will get involved in one of these faith-based programs, so we have two of those folks December 9, 2012. On December 16, our guest will be Professor Ty Newell from the University of Illinois. He's an engineer and recently took a drive across the country in an electric car. What's it like driving an electric car that you have to plug in from place to place? We'll be learning about that experience on December 16. December 23rd, right before the Christmas holidays for our Christian listeners, Sam Smith, who is the Community Engagement Director of Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, will be our guest. That's December 23rd. December 30, we'll be playing an archive program. I'll be involved in a concert that night. I sing in one of the community choirs. And we'll be playing an archive program of the author Gary Wills, who's we interviewed back in May about his new book that came out just this year on Ambrose, Augustine, and the Mystery of Baptism. The book is called Font of Life by Gary Wills. Wonderful Pulitzer Prize-winning author, and it's a fascinating interview. We'll be replaying that on December 30 at 5 p.m. Central Time. And then on January 6, we have a very special program planned that we hope we'll be able to do by phone from the Holy Land, a land considered holy by three of the major world religions, Islam, Judaism, Christianity. January 6 is the Christmas Eve as celebrated by the Orthodox Christian calendar, and we'll be talking with someone in Bethlehem by phone. That's on January 6. I have a couple of announcements of concerts coming up the next few weeks at Sinai Temple on December 9. That's Sunday night, December 9, actually in the afternoon, 4 p.m. There'll be a concert of historical Jewish liturgical music in celebration of the 90th birthday of Rabbi Isaac Newman. That'll be Sunday, December 9 at 4 p.m. at Sinai Temple. Sinai Temple is on Windsor Road, 3104 Windsor Road in Champaign, Illinois. Chet Alwis will be conducting the Sinai Temple Concert Singers. That's a free concert at Sinai Temple, December 9, 4 p.m. Sunday. Later, let's see if I can find a way to give these in order. It looks like the next one coming up for your calendars, that's December 9. December 16 is a concert called A Baroque Christmas at Holy Cross Catholic Church, 405 West Clark Street in Champaign. This is a traditional Christian Christmas concert put on by the Baroque artists of Champaign-Urbana. Sometimes use a acronym, Bach, B-A-C-H, the Baroque artists of Champaign-Urbana. Renew the warmth and joy of the holiday season at a glorious festival of music with the Bach Chorus and Orchestra and the University High School Madrigals. Again, that's Sunday at 7:30, December 16, at Holy Cross Catholic Church. $10 for students, $20 for others. And those of you who've been to that concert in the past know it's a wonderful musical event. December 16, 7:30. And then, let's see, I guess the next one would be December 30th, The Chorale, directed by Judy Byler. They've had a concert for many years at the Virginia Theater on New Year's Eve, but because the Virginia Theater is having a wonderful makeover this year, they won't be quite ready until the Ebert Film Festival. They're doing all kinds of grand things there. As a result, this concert is at a different day and in a different place. So it's on Sunday, December 30, not New Year's Eve, December 30, and it's at the Vineyard Auditorium in Urbana. That's 500 North Lincoln at 7 p.m. Sunday, December 30. $20 for tickets for that concert. It's World in Tune, Winter Around the World, music from around the world dealing with the winter season. It'll include strings from the Urbana Pops Orchestra, two young artist scholarship winners from earlier years will be back performing with the chorale, Molly Netter, soprano, and Derek Metafior playing the piano. That's Sunday, December 30, 7 p.m. at the Vineyard Auditorium, 5. At any rate, it's on North Lincoln, close to the interstate. The Vineyard, you can't miss it. Well, a lot of announcements this time of year. Let's get back to our guest, Laura Ferrix. Let me give the phone numbers again for listeners. 333-9455 if you're in Champaign-Urbana, 217 area code. If it's long distance, punch in 800-222-9455. Laura, cruise director of the Research Park. Former president of the student body. married, family, all these things in your life. What's exciting for you working with the research park?
There are many things. I think I have a wonderful job because I get to work with so many smart people, and I learn a lot along the way. Certainly being able to help somebody from when they just have an idea of a company and then see it grow over the years, and being able to be with them in the beginning and have our team of students and staff and entrepreneurs and residents help them form it into a viable business, and seeing it grow and flourish is really exciting. And we're so grateful that they welcome us into their little families as they begin.
Give me an example of something you saw start from just an idea, maybe of a faculty member or just someone who's came and started working out in one of these buildings.
Sure. There are many companies that have blossomed over time. One that we're excited about right now is a company that's just recently changed its name to Personify. It was Nuvixa. Two faculty, Sanjay Patel and Min Do, who came together to work on a collaboration. So certainly, people within the university are not, this is not foreign to them to have to work on interdisciplinary types of collaborations, just like you now see in the park between the companies happening in many cases. But the two of them came together with an idea of taking what was emerging of 3D video technology. It was going to be released in the Kinect video game for Xbox 360. Around the holidays, and they said, there's an opportunity if this really becomes pervasively used outside of video gaming that it could change the way that people communicate with each other online. So versus doing a WebEx or a GoToMeeting, which is the state of the art at the time, where you can see each other's presentation and hear each other on a conference call, what if you could put yourself inside of your presentation and share it, and that would create a different sort of presence?
Put yourself inside of it.
So kind of combining Skype with content and with voice.
I see.
And making it very easy to do that. Wow. So if you talk to somebody on Skype in your family room, you see your family room. They create a virtual green screen effect that drops all of that away and allows you to put yourself within a video, so you can watch a YouTube together, or you could put yourself inside of content or within your website so that you can point certain aspects out. It's really cool stuff. Huh. And again, when they were first talking about it, it was still just a concept. And that company has now attracted millions of dollars. It is doing quite well for itself, and it not only has venture capital funding, but also major corporations like AMD that have helped it to become where it is today, and a staff of about 20 in the research park, and a great opportunity for many of the graduate students who are doing work on human-machine interface to get to apply that in a commercial context.
Now, with the University of Illinois, like many state universities around the country, and losing state funding that they used to depend on so heavily, does the university get a cut of any of this stuff that becomes very valuable if it started here?
Yes. In most cases, the companies, if there's a professor involved in the company, most likely, or a graduate student, they're licensing the technology out of the university. Anything somebody makes in a university context in terms of research is going to be owned by the university. The university then patents the technology if they think it has commercial value, and then the new business has to license their own technology out of the university. The university then gets some percentage ownership, typically, and some sort of royalties in the future. So if there's a big success, there would be a windfall back to the university.
However, has that happened yet?
Most of when there have been exits, it's helping to pay back patent costs. So one of the tricks with all of this, I think, is the expense associated with trying to fuel this as well. So patenting is an expensive proposition, and to not only patent...
And it's a slow proposition.
And it's slow, right. Yeah. So interesting, Northwestern's talked about a lot because of their licensing dollars. But the technology that they're getting all the licensing money was patented in the 80s, and they're getting the benefits of that now.
30 years later.
Right.
Yeah.
So, the patents last for about 20 years or so. So sometimes, and it depends, the life sciences have a little bit of a different rules associated with it. But generally, there's a long-term lag. And for most startups that we see out of the university, you're looking at about 10 years until an acquisition actually happens. So that can be sort of an inflection point of windfall as well.
And I see that from our Keeping the Faith research department, that Google pays significant money to Stanford University in California.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we do hope that there are opportunities to share the wealth of successes. And in order to do so, we really need to fuel our pipeline of new technologies that are coming out of the university and change the way that we were doing it. You know, 10 years ago, they say we really didn't have the mechanism to know what we owned or effectively commercialize, which is why a lot's changed in the university. The Research Park was created. Illinois Ventures was created to be its own venture capital arm where the university is an owner and could have upside as well. The Office of Technology Management, where they do all the patenting, has been completely reinvented. And so that's trying to deal with things like Mosaic or other inventions where we didn't see the reaps of that coming back to the university, and how do we create a better business mechanism to handle this for the future.
Now, you mentioned Northwestern having been involved with this at an earlier decades than the University of Illinois here in Urbana-Champaign. I came here most recently in 81, and I grew up here, but then I was gone for 20 years. And part of that time being gone, I was in the Research Triangle Park in North Carolina, which was a joint venture between Duke University, where I was doing graduate work, and North Carolina State University in Raleigh and the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill, all of which are separated by only about 30 miles. And that was an early example of this, wasn't it? Did you go there when you were deciding whether to work at this place?
So they call it the granddaddy of research parks that everybody else emulated.
Sure.
And tried to build something different. And they just released a new master plan for their future as well. I talked about this community sense that we have in our park. So, of course, being a newer park, we get to learn from others. And one thing that started to be learned across the country through our association and others is that the model that existed there to begin with of creating isolated campuses by company doesn't necessarily foster collaboration.
I see.
And
they really are separated by several miles.
So an IBM building has its own parking lot, its own security,
its own cafeteria.
And so when they started relooking at Research Triangle Park with Centennial Park and some of their new development, that's changed and does create more of a campus environment. And we wanted to do that also. Some of the other parks at Wisconsin and Purdue that are also older than ours have also come to some of those conclusions. And as they build new projects, are trying to take some of our best practices into account as part of moving it forward. And I will say, you know, the Research Park community is one that does work together quite well. And we routinely talk with our colleagues at the other universities about how to advance this type of environment.
How many are there?
They say by the Association of University Research Parks that there are about 900 research parks in the world now. So it's definitely a growing phenomenon. It's all around the world. So many different governments and foreign countries see this as an opportunity to grow economic development in their countries based on innovation and research. And in the U.S., it is certainly a growing trend of large universities or those with research basis that they could create a similar type of park. With new ones springing up all over. But ours did win Top Research Park of the Year for 2011, which was by this association that represents so many others. And we were really just thrilled and appreciative to get such recognition as still what we felt like a new kid on the block getting the award, not as the new park, but as the established Outstanding Research Park of the Year.
And what were the successes that you had that really earned you that award?
So some of the things that they will note for us when we've gotten press and certainly within AURP as well, one is the presence of students. We really feel in the research park that students are a vital part of what's happening and has driven our success. A third of the workforce is students, and those are a mixture of graduate and undergraduate students. They work year-round, so that's quite different than other student environments. The students work about 10 to 20 hours a week during the school year, and then full-time during the summer. Many of those students will stay with the company for years. It's great for the students that they get hands-on experience while they're still in school. It also makes their education more affordable. We're talking about tough times in the state. Well, financial aid's been one of the things that suffered, and this can play some part in that. The student gets an opportunity to increase their ability to hopefully get hired upon graduation as well, either by the company, which many of the companies seek to do, but also to be more competitive overall in seeking jobs. If a student works about 10 hours a week during the school year, full-time during the summer at State Farm, they make around $13,500 a year,
wow,
which happens to be about what tuition is now. So something that's very doable for the student without having to do a co-op model where they would take time off of school and may impact the affordability of their education. This gets them through the same four-year timeline and gives them an opportunity to make some money and really improve their knowledge along the way.
What else kind of distinguished the University of Illinois Research Park that that caused you to win this 2011 award?
So entrepreneurial excellence is something that I think a lot of the parks value. And how do you create the right sort of ecosystem to support that? And that was recognized through some of the things that we do with our entrepreneurs and residents and certainly the events and support programs we have. This mixture of the startup companies with large companies is also something that we've been noted for. The ability to integrate the two into a common community, both by the physical buildings, the way that they've been constructed, but also actively trying to create engagement. As an example of that, we've are really blessed to have John Deere in the research park. It's one of the large corporations. It's a company that most people think simply about tractors, but their technology is vast in the areas of interest. And that's a company that not only wants to worry about new systems or sensors on tractors, but actively has looked at engagement with startup companies as an opportunity for innovation as well. And I think is a good example of being a good citizen in a research park. So some of the types of companies they've worked with include a startup company that works on plasma technologies. Startup that came out of the incubator, has about 20 employees, has done a lot of work in the Defense Department, and more recently has worked on some fracking-related technologies to be able to see environmental impact. And they were talking to another company called Waterborne that does soil detection, soil and field tests, and uses simulation that was challenged with nitrogen detection in soil. And Starfire said they could use their technology to help solve that problem, and why don't we go talk to Deere and see if we can all do it together? And they successfully got NSF funding to carry that forward. Another sort of collaboration that Deere's had in a very different way is with State Farm. So you'd think two companies, completely different technologies, why should they talk to each other? Well, it turned out that State Farm had an interest in robotics, some safety issues that might come with actually sending people out on the ground to assess after earthquakes, for example, and might have an ability to have robots do that job, and knew that Deere was actually very good at robotics as they've done a lot with autonomous farming equipment. And the two started sharing knowledge with each other. Another example on small companies is we have a company that does called Prairie Fire Consulting that works on improving from concept to actual manufacturing, how a product will go through that pipeline and have little variation. And Deere started working with them. They also work with a company that does GIS analytics called Plowman Analytics. And they also work with a company called Roundtable that does advertising and marketing. So to see one company coming in that could touch five or six startup companies and really become a company and client of record is, I think, speaks to the value of putting these companies together and how they can impact each other and hopefully all have greater success.
The university has so many deans and departments and schools and colleges. Are there any that you can't imagine being involved in the research park, or can you fit? Could they all eventually have a tie there?
We're not tied to one area or another, and it is diversified. For example, agriculture technologies, we're certainly seeing a growth, and it's interesting. Venture capital typically had not been very fond of supporting ag, but now it's in vogue as people start thinking about water shortages or food for the future, that now the ag sector is of greater importance and of interest.
What about the humanities? You mentioned education.
What else? I think a challenge for us will be partially the humanities. The Office of Technology Management is specifically going to do an open house for the humanities in April to address partially that issue, to talk about that. I think fine and applied arts is another area where we have underrealized the potential, and there you can see on Kickstarter, for example, where schools like Rhode Island School of Design and Maryland and others have harnessed the creativity of their artists, they're fine artists, and the opportunity to create product around it. And so I think that's something that we'll look at doing more of. We just hired through the Office of the Vice President for Research, my boss's office, Dina McDonough, who's from Industrial Design, to be a new designer in residence. So we've been helping people with the business side of their product development. But one of the new areas we think and that bridges with the applied arts, fine and applied arts, would be to improve product design. So if you're creating a new medical device or you're creating a new whatever kind of widget or instrument, that you should be thinking about user interface and you should be thinking about the form that it will take.
I want to ask you about your staff in just a minute, but we are about 20 minutes before the end of our program. Let me give the phone numbers again for listeners who'd like to join this conversation and ask a question of our guest, Laura Frerichs, who is the director of the University of Illinois Research Park that includes enterprise work, startup companies, the incubator, 90 different companies in 13 buildings over a large number of acres right here in Champaign-Urbana next to the University of Illinois. 333-9455 if you're in the 217 area code. We realize many listeners are happy just to listen, and that's fine, but if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, do call. Long distance, 800-222-9455. If you've missed part of this program, want to hear it, go to our archives at will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith. Leave the G off of keeping. We're very informal here. And if we thought about that problem back 14 years ago and we named the program, we might not have spelled it that way, but we did. Coming up next week on Keeping the Faith, we'll be talking with two young adults who are volunteers in faith-based programs that have sent them to volunteer internationally and in different places in the U.S. Krista Click, Chad Pittman, next week, December 9, 2012, here on Keeping the Faith. Another musical program coming up in the Champaign-Urbana area, I would like to announce the Parkland Fine and Applied Arts program is providing Sing We Now, Joyous Songs of the Season, the Parkland Chamber Singers, the Parkland Chorus, the Urbana High School Honors Choir, the Vocal Chords Required Group. Those four groups will be all performing at McKinley Presbyterian Church, 809 South 5th in Champaign. That's the corner of John and 5th. That's Sunday, December 9 at 7 p.m. Admission is free and open to the public. That's the four groups from Parkland, Sunday, December 9, 7 p.m. at McKinley Presbyterian Church in Champaign, Illinois. Free admission. And again, a reminder that that same day at 4 in the afternoon, you can go to Sinai Temple first and hear the concert singers perform historic Jewish liturgical music, Sinai Temple, at 3104 Windsor Road in Champaign, also on December 9. That's a celebration of the 90th birthday of Rabbi Isaac Newman. And on December 30, the chorale will be singing A World in Tune, Winter Around the World, music from around the world, celebrating the winter season. That's December 30, not New Year's Eve, but December 30, a Sunday at the Vineyard. This concert has usually been at the Virginia Theater, but it's being renovated right now. So go to the North Lincoln Avenue up by the I-74 and at the Vineyard at 7 p.m. The Urbana Pops Orchestra, Molly Netter soprano, Derek Montefiore on piano, and the chorale directed by Julie Byler. That's Sunday, December 30 at 7. And a Baroque Christmas music at Holy Cross Catholic Church, 7:30 December 16. That's $20. It is tickets $20 for the chorale concert on December 30. The Baroque Christmas, December 16, $20 for adults, $10 for students. And that will be at Holy Cross Church in Champaign, 405 West Clark Street. A wonderful concert of Baroque music. And the University High School Madrigals will also be singing. Back to Laura Frerichs, and tell us about your staff.
So we have a team of six, and then we have a team of 10 students in addition to the full-time folks. On the full-time side, it includes a person working on marketing, information technology, the administrative support, accounting, that kind of thing for the research park and enterprise works. The students range from computer science to graphic design students, MBA students, even labor and employment relations of how we can help companies. And we do projects for free for entrepreneurs that are in enterprise works in the research park, as well as clients in a new program we have called iStart to kick them out of the university. We also have a team of entrepreneurs in residence, which includes seven people that consult for any entrepreneur out of the university. Faculty, student, staff that wants to start a company can get free consultation from folks that are on that team that come with good experiences as executives within startup companies or founders themselves. And Small Business Innovation Research Funding, a federal program that many take advantage of, they can get free consulting on applying for those grants. So that's been a real help to, I think, getting a lot of this off the ground as well. And that's our team. We partner with Fox Atkins Development, which is the private developer of the research park that does all the financing and leasing of all the buildings in the research park, and certainly has been a wonderful collaborator in making this all happen.
And you did work with them, for them, before coming to the research park.
I did. So I worked on attracting corporations in that capacity and new project development in terms of new buildings or what we were going to conceive for the future planning of the research park.
Give me your elevator speech to a new company, why they should consider coming to the University of Illinois Research Park.
So it depends on whether they're a startup coming out of the university or if they're coming from somewhere else.
Okay, but you've met a professor at the Atlanta Union. You've heard this woman talk about an idea. What do you tell her?
Well, we certainly try to depict that you're not on your own and that you can come to the park and be surrounded by a team that's going to be there to cheerlead you through the whole process. It's not only affordable, but also an environment where you're amongst peers. You're amongst peers that are all trying to go through this journey together and learn from each other. You have programming resources and
You have to clear your throat, and I'll let you do that for just a minute. Our guest today on Keeping the Faith is Laura Frericks, who's director of the University of Illinois Research Park. This is the time of year when the climate is changing radically from hot to cold and cold to hot, and so I have a few allergy reactions, and you're having to cough, but you were saying...
Sorry about that.
That's
I've been
right.
under the weather myself.
Right ahead.
Certainly that we want to create the environment that makes it easier for a company to get started and that somebody can feel that they are getting a good value for being there. Any dollars that go into Enterprise Works, it's a university facility, and we reinvest all of that back into entrepreneurship to support the next company that's coming around or for any of the programs that I described. We also have a good success ratio. For our companies that come into the incubator, they have attracted more than $500 million in venture and angel capital funding,
wow.
which is quite impressive for companies that started right here in the Midwest in Champaign-Urbana.
Wow. Say those figures again.
About $526 million has been attracted to the small
wow.
startup companies coming out of the incubator, which some of which have grown significantly since then.
Sure.
In addition, their success rates are far greater than they would be if they had never been in an incubator. The companies that have gone through the incubator and graduated, of those, 68% are still in business, and that's since 2003, which is far better than most technology startup companies. And for us in the community, I think it's important that most of those have continued to locate here in Illinois, and in the majority have stayed in Champaign County. So it does go back to support the community and says it's possible to do a startup here. And for us, for our faculty, I think it's important that you can do two things at the same time. You can continue to be a full-time faculty member for that academic integrity and journey that you started on, but that doesn't mean you can't do a startup company on the side. And you can do so comfortably in this community where you're one foot in the academic side and one foot in for your company in the incubator setting. For the large corporations, certainly the opportunity to be on campus and take advantage of everything that's here at the University of Illinois has been powerful for them. And if it didn't happen successfully for the companies, you wouldn't see them expand over time again and again, and for them to share their stories with every other corporation that comes and looks. They really become our best cheerleaders. State Farm has given countless tours to every major corporation that wants to see and learn about what they're doing.
Caterpillar constantly telling their story of having been here for 10 years, of why it's possible to use students as apprentices, and how over-the-shoulder and mentoring really works to create qualified engineers for their future.
We're down to our last 5 or 6 minutes. I'm going to let you clear your throat again, and I'll just take a minute to remind listeners, this is WILL AM 580. We're heard also simultaneously at 90.9 FM HD3. For those of you who have those nice new HD radios. And, of course, this time of year when the AM signal is lower than later because of federal regulations, FM may be the way to hear this program this time of night best. Of course, you can also listen via your computer and many portable devices. If you have the public radio app like I do on my phone, you can hear this program anywhere around the world live and access, of course, the archive programs as well. If you've missed part of this program, you can go to will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith, leave the G off of keeping. This program will be archived within a week or two, and you can hear our guest, Laura Frericks, director of the University of Illinois Park, if you missed part of this program. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs, although I'm assisted by two or three other folks who fill in when I have to be traveling or otherwise indisposed. If my voice gets too bad, I can call them even at the last minute. And Don Nolan, a professor of philosophy and religion from Parkland College, has stepped in many times. Stan Yenches has helped in the past as well. And more recently, one of our very popular programs on the Amish, Danny Otto, was a guest and had some folks he suggested be interviewed. And I said, well, why don't you just interview them? So he's done one, and he's going to be doing a few more in January, who teaches at Eastern Illinois University. So we have professors of philosophy who do this, professors of religion, and I'm happy to fill in when I can. Well, let's get back to Laura. I think we'll see if your voice is doing okay. That's all right. This is that time of year. What have I forgot to ask about? What would you like to say about the park that I haven't?
For this show, I think it's important not only to talk about companies who are concerned about commercial success in terms of making profits, but an emerging trend that we're excited to see is social entrepreneurs, those that try to see how they can do two things at the same time, create a business but also help others. And I think that comes from their own faith in many cases or their own sense of wanting to give back. So a few of the companies that I would point out in this space include one from an international standpoint, as you were mentioning, some work that extends from this community, a company that's making prosthetic arms that are being used around the world, that are helping amputees that have suffered because of agricultural accidents in developing countries or earthquakes.
Or war.
Correct. And so a lot of their work right now is in Guatemala and in India. It's a company that just renamed itself Bump. It had been Illini Prosthetic Technologies. It's gotten a lot of recognition.
B-U-M-P.
Yep. And that's partially because they're seeing that they want to bump other nonprofits to the next level and help them with creating new technologies from a mechanical engineering standpoint and training. We have another company that's doing quite well now that started with students founding it called IntelliWheels, that's improving the way that wheelchair users are able to experience a manual wheelchair by doing gear shifting, and really started with a presence of helping many that have challenges here on campus, wheelchair athletes that were involved in the company as examples.
We've had one of the co-founders of that program on this
And
of that company on this program, and people who want to hear that can go to our archives and just put in IntelliWheels or her name.
Marissa Siebel.
Siebel. How is Siebel spelled?
S-I-E-B-E-L.
That's great.
So
put that in the search box on WILL website, and you can hear that program.
They are actually manufacturing product, 200 wheelchairs going out the doors soon, being used in places like Clark Lindsay and others. And importantly for them, in mission was not only to serve their audience, but locally, they wanted to manufacture those wheelchair parts, those wheels, using local resources. So their parts are coming from areas like Paxton, working in Rantoul now with some of their shipping and sourcing locally as much as they can. Another company called Lost Points does work primarily in software and databases, but came together with a company, NuVixa, that I'd mentioned with the video technologies to help at Orpheum. So they saw an opportunity to impact education and how could you get kids to learn to do software development, but in a fun, exciting way. So to create new exhibits where you can travel into the galaxy or you can explore under the sea and put yourself inside of those settings.
And you mentioned the local children's museum at the Orpheum, Theater.
Yes, the Orpheum Theater has the Orpheum Science Museum, and that's where their first exhibit of this was. Part of their mission is for all the money that they gain from clients that are their traditional commercial clients, that they would set aside a portion to get reinvested in the community and nonprofit projects. So I think that those types of missions speak to some of the changing landscape of where particularly younger people that are our entrepreneurial clients really want to have both sides of the house doing something that they see the greater good in application as well.
And now if you can just find some way in the research park to help WILL Radio find ways to get people to pay when they download our archive programs that are available free.
Yeah, there may be, but it may not be the best for public access either. So certainly I think there are many that value the content.
Have to balance all those values.
And certainly we've had more informally many that have come through from schools and young people, Boys and Girls Club in Champaign, that see the research park as a place to learn about science and application. And we very much welcome that, have been able to show kids everything from biotechnology to chemistry to engineering to working on tractors and whatever might appeal to them. So every year we make an effort to do that. And I'm always so thrilled at the generosity of the people that work there that open their doors to show a child maybe from a disadvantaged neighborhood not only an office for the first time, but how to use a microscope and things like that I think are really exciting to see. As well as ongoing efforts like food drives or clothing drives or things like that that we take part in. Since it's the holiday season right now, one that's been an ongoing effort is helping Cunningham Children's Home, where we have a competition amongst the buildings to get the gifts for kids in the Cunningham Children's Home. And those are always taken quickly, all the ornaments with all the wishes. And I think it speaks to their interest in helping the community.
Now, your personal family background, your family name was Appenzeller, which was a famous name in Korea. Tell us about that. You have 30 seconds.
So Appenzeller is a Swiss name, but it's known in Korea because my family were the first Methodist missionaries to go to Korea. They went over in 1885 and started the Methodist church there and helped to create schools, colleges, and high schools that were eventually some of the first formal education from a Western style that were developed in Korea, and they lived there for three generations.
Our guest today on Keeping the Faith has been Laura Frerix, director of the University of Illinois Research Park. We've been talking about the value of shared knowledge. Thank you, Laura.
Thank you very much.
Again next week on Keeping the Faith, Krista Click, Chad Pittman talking about faith-based adult volunteering experiences. Professor Ty Newell on December 16, 2012, talking about driving cross-country in an electric car. Again, concerts coming up. The Chorale, December 30, Sunday at the Vineyard, $20. A wonderful evening of music, celebrating Witcher around the world. Urbana Pops Orchestra Strings, Molly Netter Soprano, Derek Montefiore on the piano, Young Adult Scholarship winners. A Broke Christmas, December 16, 7:30, also $20, $10 for students at Holy Cross Catholic Church, 405 Clark Street, Champaign. The University High School Madrigals will be there, as well as the Bach Chorus and Orchestra, directed by Chad Alwis. And finally, at Sinai Temple, December 9, Sunday at 4 in the afternoon, a concert in honor and celebration of the 90th birthday of Rabbi Isaac Newman. That will be historical Jewish liturgical music. That's a free concert, December 9 at 4 p.m. at Sinai Temple on Windsor Road. And finally, the Parkland, four different musical groups from Parkland, December 9, at 7 p.m. at McKinley Presbyterian Church. Thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Hi, I'm Jim Fleming, host of To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI. Looking for something to talk about at your next party, or maybe how memory works? Fascinating discussion on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening from 7 to 9 on AM 580. This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.